All right. Welcome to Alphabet Scoop, episode 16. I'm your host, Stephen Hall, and this is Abner Lee. What's up, dude?
Hey, it's good to be back after last week.
Oh, yeah. If you didn't tune in last week it was Kyle Bradshaw.
Who gave a masterclass in fuchsia.
Yeah. Our Kyle Bradshaw has been posting articles about fuchsia for a few months now, every Friday. And he's actually got one that I'm supposed to be editing right now, I think. To go live this afternoon, but I'll have to do that after the show. So stay tuned for that. And you can head over to YouTube or any of your favorite podcast platforms to check out last week's show. It's an entire hour, like Abner said, and it's a masterclass on fuchsia, or at least what we know of fuchsia so far. And speaking of fuchsia, we're actually going to talk a little bit about fuchsia on the show today.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a mystery and it's an ongoing just adventure to learn more about and hear about in our wild tips that we've been receiving from our tipster. So today we're gonna cover Android messages for web. We're gonna cover Yeti, which is Google's in the works gaming console / streaming service. We're going to talk a little bit about the Acer Chromebook 10, which I got in the middle of the day. So I don't have that many thoughts on it yet, but I have some. We might talk a little bit about Pixel 3, and then there's plenty of other stuff that happened this week that we can talk about if we have to. What's first?
What is first is definitely diving right into. It's a bit of a smaller update, but it's one that many of you are excited for. So Android Messages, after being announced, Android Messages for Web, after being announced early last week, is now available to all users. And many of you are very excited to finally be able to text from the web. Do you use it much? I don't. I'm a bit of a Google Voice user.
Yeah, I don't. I'm entirely and completely unqualified to talk about Android messages on this podcast right now. I've set it up, if that counts. I think the thing is, it's actually weird. If you think about it, so if you remember with Apple and iMessage, they had iMessage on laptops, you know, in the standalone app for a long time. And then I forgot which version was. Maybe it was Mavericks. They added the ability to text via SMS. So like it would connect directly to your iPhone and you'd be able to text SMS as well on top of iMessage. For a long time, it was only iMessage, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's just weird to see that Google's kind of doing the opposite. It's like they've launched this app that, you know, it ties into your Android messages, but it's, for all intents and purposes, SMS only for the moment.
Yeah. Well, RCS, which is there was some RCS news today with, I believe it was T-Mobile adding support in the US for one device, the Galaxy S7, I believe.
Right. So if you have the Galaxy S7 and you use T-Mobile, then you have RCS and you can send RCS messages to only other people who also have RCS. So yeah. I would say that the intersection of those people is not very not very wide reaching right now.
One tiny tidbit about RCS that I learned directly from Google is actually, so they announced this chat thing like that.
Right.
However, a few months ago, and chat. So with SMS, you call it like text messages, SMS messages. But Google and the carriers want you to call messages sent over RCS are chat messages.
Oh, like, that's interesting.
That's the official terminology. It's official what the industry wants you to refer to it. And it's a bit weird for you and I and the technically savvy, because chat, we have like a totally different connotation of chat as like this web-based sent message. But now what Google's trying, what all these carriers are trying to do is to make you think about it for RCS.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't even think about like when I send messages on Facebook Messenger, which is probably my primary messaging platform, that and iMessage. But when I send messages on Facebook Messenger or on WhatsApp or whatever, I don't think of them. Like, I think of them as like, if I'm talking about someone, I'll say like, I sent you a Facebook message.
Yeah.
You know, like, or yeah. I sent you a message on WhatsApp. Like, there's not even a, I sent you a WhatsApp message. That sounds weird to me. It's usually I sent you a message, you know, I just use the generic message term and
definitely.
It's interesting though, because I feel like some of the older generation would call everything a text. Like, everything is a text.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know my mom will say, I texted you, right? But she's talking about a message that she sent on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a generational divide there, I think, a little bit. But yeah, that's an interesting note. I didn't know that. I didn't know that Google was trying to say, trying to define the lingo already.
All the carriers are, to be exact.
Oh, yeah, because they're all working together on this. But yeah, that's really interesting. Yep. But although you have to admit, we know that Google is kind of the one heading up the whole chat brand, right? Like that's kind of, it seems like it's Google's thing, right? At least that's the notion that I got from Dieter's original story.
The pushback I got was that it's the carriers. So I don't know.
Oh, okay. Like, well, then
it's, they worked, there's some, they talked it out, but I have to think that Google did something, like they were in those meetings. So
I think the way Dieter framed his post was, this is Google's next attempt at messaging, which, you know, maybe the better way to put it would have been, this is Google's next attempt at messaging, but it's not really theirs.
their
next attempt at messaging is to not attempt messaging.
It's to go along with everybody else.
Yeah.
The funny thing about RCS is that, like, on the OS level, the backers, it's Google and Microsoft. And I have no idea why Microsoft is on that list. Just this morning, I was looking at the GSMA standards body thing, and they said that Microsoft, what are they? Desktop message? I have no idea
what
role they're playing.
Maybe we'll see. Interesting. Maybe we'll see like a desktop RCS client from Microsoft that pairs with your phone or something.
Connected PCs. I don't know.
The question still remains for me on RCS is when. We've talked about the if, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, I wonder when Apple's going to do it, because that will be kind of like its defining
moment.
Anyways, so like, I haven't really used the desktop Android messages client because I don't really send SMS hardly at all, except for when I'm getting, I would say my primary use case or use of SMS is anytime I'm like logging into an app or whatever, like Uber, and it sends me an SMS to like send me a confirmation code. So my entire window of Android messages on the web right now is just like Uber, WhatsApp, whatever, like all of those, like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All those apps and services. And then like notifications for like your table is ready or whatever, like for like Open Table or whatever. But the interesting thing about Android Messages for Web is that it's pretty much a carbon copy of the Allo web client. So like Allo for Web launched like earlier this year, right? Was it this year? No, it was like last summer.
Yeah.
It was like September or something that it finally rolled out to everyone.
And people were so excited about that as well.
Yeah, man, time flies. It feels like that was just a few months ago, but that was like almost a year ago that Allo for Web launched.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Android Messages for Web, it's like a carbon copy. It's like they just like changed a few of the, like a little bit of the underlying code. At least user facing, it's exactly the same pretty much.
Yeah.
Are you still using Allo?
No, I had to open it to compare it to Android messages, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's pretty much, let me see. I don't think I've used it, but I actually, yes, I do. So like I have a friend who I forgot, but I just have one friend that I talk to on Allo, and that's we used to talk on iMessage. So like I carry two phones for those who don't, I carry an iPhone all the time, as well as my Pixel 2. But for a while he had an iPhone and we were talking on iMessage for a while, and then he switched to a Pixel. And so we started messaging on Allo, of course. And I convinced him. So he was he was one of like maybe three friends I had in real life that I was talking to on Allo. And now that's down to one, and we sent like a couple messages yesterday. So that's the only living like thread I've got in Allo. Yeah. It's dead. It's interesting to me, like how much Google really pushed Allo up to the last minute. Like
they tried. They tried.
Yeah, we didn't really write it. I don't know if we wrote an article about this, but Google had, so I did a little bit of digging on LinkedIn, and Google had like dozens, if not hundreds, of college kids that they were paying, I'm sure.
Yeah,
like,
I remember that. Yeah,
you some, that. Yeah, some small amount. Like they're probably just like paying them some flat fee to go do this, but like a bunch of college kids like going on campus and like putting up posters. And like I read the job description actually, and it was like it required you to like start a group message with some of your like classmates for a group project, and then you had to fill out all this like paperwork like about your experience and like feedback and stuff. And then they also shipped out like posters for people to like hang on the walls and like in college.
Oh my gosh.
So they were really pushing it at the last minute. I mean, they were looking for those niches to fill, you know. And honestly, I feel like Allo would have done a good job of filling that like college group message. It's basically trying to take on GroupMe. GroupMe is easily the primary go to for college kids that are doing like group projects and stuff. And I think they wanted to fill that niche, but can't take down the beast.
I feel it's Messenger, like Messenger owns that market for our generation definitely so well.
Facebook Messenger?
Yeah,
I mean that's true. I just am, at least in my experience in college classes, and maybe this is old, you know, maybe people have moved on already, but my experience was always GroupMe. But that could also just be a demographic thing. It could be a geographical thing, you know, like a lot of these apps will have like, I mean, we all know that like some apps like WhatsApp are like far more popular in, you know, Europe or outside of the States. So there's, and even within the United States, there's geographical bubbles of people who use apps. Like Viber is really popular in certain geographical bubbles in the United States and et cetera. So yeah, it could be that. Yeah. So that's Android Messages. TLDR, we don't use it. And we're waiting for RCS to be ubiquitous so that maybe we can start using it. And it would be nice if Apple did RCS so that, you know, we weren't stuck talking to only other Android people. So next up, we can talk about Yeti. So this is, you're excited to talk about this, right?
Yeah, I am. So Yeti. So earlier this year, there was a very strong rumor that Google was interested in gaming, specifically cloud gaming, streaming services that would offer like lower the barrier to like powerful real console level games. So it's codenamed Yeti, and according to this report in The Information earlier this year, Google was making this streaming service, they were making hardware, and they were talking to big name developers. So just yesterday, we had another report from Kotaku that Google is still at it with Yeti, but they're making a really big content play. They really want to get name games. So they're looking, they may be interested in hiring a game studio, and they've been hiring top game developers and marketers from various studios, well-known AAA title studios. So
what's the timeline on this? Like the first report on Yeti was February, and it came from The Information. So we treat Information reports pretty much as fact. You know, even if stuff doesn't pan out, we're pretty, I mean, they have pretty solid track record. But they reported on Yeti at first in February, but they were kind of vague.
They had a past plan, said that Google is going to launch it in December 2017 for the holiday season, but of course that never came to light. So it suggests they scrapped it or something, or they had a new fervor.
Interestingly being led by Mario Queiroz, who introduced the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL on stage at Google's event. I don't know, what else has he done at Google? I forgot. I feel like I remember him.
Google Home before that, at the first 10.4 event. He did Google Home before Rishi Chandra.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I think you're right. But yeah, I mean, so like, we've got these two reports, so we're pretty sure it's happening. And we don't really know a timeline. Obviously, we don't really. I mean, timelines are probably the hardest thing to
to
guess or to report on, I guess, because stuff's always changing.
Especially with gaming and Google, because according to the report from earlier this year, there were several failed attempts that did not mature. That there was like an Android-based gaming console that seemed like it was like on live startup that failed.
Yeah, I remember on live. That was like the first thing. That was the very first like attempt at this, I'm pretty sure. It was like one of the first like wide reaching attempts. And then they got bought by Sony, right? I think so.
I don't know if they were even bought. I don't know what happened to them.
I think they. I know that they shut down, but
yeah, they definitely.
Usually, a company like that doesn't just shut down. See, okay, here we go. Sony has acquired important parts of OnLive. Due to the sale, all OnLive services were discontinued as of April 30th, 2015. Wow. So, I don't remember, but I feel like this first debuted like in 2012 or something. So the very first report about OnLive came from. It debuted in 2012 at some point, and it looks like reviews started going up. Like their press website on onlive.com is like all from like early 2014. So, it launched in like 2012, and then seemingly went wider in 2014 or something. But yeah, it came and went pretty fast. Obviously, this kind of format, I think there's still a lot of potential in it, but it's not really like. Ubiquitous yet, you know, like
it's not ubiquitous. So Xbox and Microsoft, Xbox and Sony,
right?
Xbox and PlayStation,
right? Yeah. And I guess Google maybe sees this as like an untapped market potentially.
Yeah, because from a technology standpoint, this is their game to win.
Right.
You know, Microsoft is Azure, so I'm not sure if Azure and Xbox teams are talking, but probably. But like from a standpoint, Google should have like they should be able to get this hardware down, this tech, at least a server component down. Because one of the more exciting rumors was that the console would be like a Chromecast-sized device that you just plug a Chromecast and you can stream games. From servers, and that could, and all the processing is done on the cloud.
Yeah, I actually remember trying out. I did like a free trial for OnLive or something, and I remember playing Burnout Paradise, which is one of those like Burnout the franchise, right? It was like one of those like racing franchises where you just drive a car around and you crash into stuff. But anyways, I remember OnLive and just thinking that it was like just slightly not responsive enough. Like, you know how using direct console hardware, you know, it's always super responsive. But I felt like OnLive was just like just on that line of being too laggy to be like playable, I guess. So, yeah, I'm wondering like on the technology side, like what Google has that could make it possible or what. What existing things that Google does where that Yeti would use similar technologies. I guess streaming on YouTube, kind of what people are watching right now is kind of, you know, they obviously have that backbone and stuff. One thing I'd wonder is, go ahead, what'd you say?
Google Cloud has a partnership with Unity, the gaming engine.
Yeah, that's true.
Cool. Connected games, you were saying?
I wonder what the... So yeah, Chromecast, how does that work? Like, so if all of the rendering is all being done on the cloud, is it feasible to do something the size of a Chromecast, you think? Like,
oh yeah, because in theory you would just be putting up pixels on the screen,
right?
When you make a move on the controller, it gets sent to the cloud,
right? It just seems like even in the best case scenario, like, I've never used it, so maybe someone who has can leave us a comment or, you know, share their experience. But I've never used it, like, the modern, like, offerings from Sony and Nvidia in this category. But, like, my question is it up to par in 2018? Like, are the current services in terms of performance, like, up to par? And is there some hurdle that Google needs to jump to be better than what Sony or Nvidia already offers?
I'm very excited by Yeti because, like, as a consumer, like, the only thing I have is a Nintendo Switch, which I love. But I would like more powerful games without necessarily buying a console and doing all that. But, like, okay, from, like, Moore's Law, this technology is getting cheaper and cheaper. I think I saw a deal from our colleagues at 9to5 Toys of an Xbox at $150. So the idea that, like, Google's making all this investment, this cloud streaming technology in the cloud, versus the idea of this of consoles, of full dedicated consoles, I don't know, dropping to like $100 in like the next 5 years, that like kind of negates like the technological hardware advantage. What you're left is the idea of like a game subscription service where you can access all the games out there, which is what Microsoft and Xbox are doing. Microsoft and Sony, I keep confusing those two, are doing as like pay one fee every month and you get access to the whole catalog of games. So that's where Google's left with. And I hope they like realize that they're moving forward to that future of like $100 consoles. So like it comes back to the content, to like making and owning and offering all the best content.
Yeah, one thing I wonder is this where, let's just jump ahead in time 10 years, is this where gaming is going to go anyway? So like, is the, you know, at-home console model, is that on its way out? You know, like, I don't know. It's kind of like, I think of it kind of like how our apps running directly on our phone. Is that on the way out? You know, like, you know, Google's doing stuff with like instant apps and stuff. And Fuchsia is kind of like,
cloud-based. I think based
built on like this cloud-based system of like, you know, it doesn't revolve around these individual pieces of software that run on the device as much as it revolves around, you know, in live time pulling stuff from the cloud. And it's like, I wonder if Google sees this as like the same kind of transition where it's like we're moving away from, you know, running stuff, like processing, like doing like tasks and calculations on the device itself to the cloud, which, I mean, in many, many ways, that's already happening and been happening for a long time. But gaming seems like an obvious, like I said, that's already been done. Like OnLive's been around for years or it was around. And so the idea is not new, but maybe Google sees this as like, this is where gaming's going inevitably. So let's get on the cusp of the next generation of gaming. Basically, it's like Google saying like, you know, it's Google predicting that the Xbox model is going away, and maybe Microsoft doesn't. Maybe Microsoft and Sony, if Google's doing this, maybe Microsoft and Sony should be a little bit concerned about their hardware business. You know, because if The Witcher 3, as I mean, this Kotaku report mentioned, imagine running The Witcher 3 in a Chrome tab. If that's possible, then what's the, if that's, you know, if what's the reason for someone to buy a console? I mean, if you can run the toppest tier game on any device you own.
On a Chromebook. Just think about that.
Hardware becomes completely irrelevant, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, there's definitely some technical hurdles to jump over there, but if Google can pull it off, it's gonna shake the industry a lot. And it's not just Google pulling it off. Obviously, Sony's doing it too. And so I think it's gonna be a whole industry thing, but it'll be interesting to see how Google competes as assumably hardware consoles become, you know, less important. Mm-hmm. On top of all this, so we've throughout, you know, the last 16 episode 16, so 16 weeks of Alphabet Scoop, we've thrown in little pieces here and there of like tips we've got that we haven't been able to corroborate. One tip we got just like in the last 48 hours, actually, from the same or one tipster that we're fairly, I mean, they have a pretty good track record. So we only mention them on the podcast because they have a track record. So, you know, they've definitely been wrong about some things, but it's they've been accurate enough that I think it's worth giving at least one grain of salt. What did we hear? What's the gist? What are you excited about?
So yeah, okay. So in the short term, like what you and I are excited about is like the technical specs for this. Like, how is this going to work? Like, what is the OS? What OS is Google running what are they creating to run this cloud service? And again, same caveats apply to all our previous rumors from this tipster, but from what we're hearing, the prototype Yeti device is running Android and an unreleased version of Android at that. So, but even more interesting is that, again, this tip that one iteration of this internally at Google is running Fuchsia, which is kind of bringing everything that we know together, everything that we're actively covering about Google's future together.
Yeah, and this guy says that he doesn't know why, or he, I shouldn't assume the gender, but they don't know why there are two prototypes, or they don't know why there's one running Android or one running Fuchsia. But they say that it has something to do with the associated hardware being released prior to Fuchsia's eventual arrival. So that's interesting to think about. Like they're planning to, I guess what the gist of what he's saying is they're planning to launch Yeti before Fuchsia is ready to either be morphed into what Android is or launch itself or whatever. You can watch last week's episode here about Kyle and I's like interpretation of what Google's doing with Fuchsia. But basically, you know, Google has a few options. They can morph it into Android. They can, you know, slowly change Android to be more like Fuchsia and then switch at some point, or, you know, they could launch it as its own thing somehow on separate hardware. We don't really know. But I guess the tipster is saying, you know, he thinks that they're testing it, both Android and Fuchsia, because they might launch Yeti with Android and then launch, you know, a second Yeti or a second generation of Yeti, or potentially push a software update that would push the underlying software to Fuchsia versus Android. So that's really interesting, you know, in the context of we don't really know what Google's plan is for, like, is Fuchsia replacing Android? Is Fuchsia going to be Android? Whatever. Like, this is a little bit of an insight into what they might be planning.
It also speaks to how, like, going forward, everything is being taken into future at Google is being taken into consideration for all the services.
Because
if the OS can run it.
I don't know how much of this we've mentioned on the show, but there, I think in bits and pieces we mentioned all of this, but we've heard from the same tipster that Google is also testing Fuchsia. Now, not testing Fuchsia exclusively, like, I don't think this is Google's, like, this device is for sure launching with Fuchsia, but
it's testing in the way
we've heard. Yeah, right. Testing in parallel to whatever the status quo is. Mm-hmm. We've heard that Google's also testing Fuchsia on a supposed Pixelbook 2 prototype and on its first party
smart display.
So it, given that, I mean, that's three devices that we're hearing that Google is testing what we know as fuchsia on.
A diverse set of devices.
Right. It's all kinds of things.
Device, exactly. A gaming device, a home device. So it's like,
So if this is true, then that would mean Google's testing fuchsia everywhere, basically. And that's a significant tidbit, and probably not one that we've had until today, because, you know, we heard from the tipster that fuchsia on Pixelbook 2 is like, okay. And then, you know, Pixel Slate or whatever their first party smart display is running fuchsia. And it's like, okay. But now we have three whole devices that supposedly Google's testing fuchsia on. So it's adding weight, and it kind of gives us a little bit of an idea of the whole picture here. So beyond that, though, fuchsia, there's something else this tipster said, which was that, and this kind of reiterates what Kotaku said earlier, which is that a few game studios have already started working with Google to port currently available software. And by currently available software, we mean like AAA titles.
Yeah.
And that's already being tested internally. So I'm not sure. I didn't read the Kotaku report in full, but I don't know if they basically said that. But
yeah, they basically said that.
And then I think it's so funny, but this tipster also says that no, Skyrim is not one of the things that they're testing on Yeti at the moment. So that's really interesting. Although they do say that
the quality that we can expect.
Right. Exactly. That's the level of games that are being tested. And I don't want to mention the game that they specifically say is testing. I don't think it's a good idea, because I feel like that's too specific and it might give away their identity. But there is a well-known AAA title that you've played, right, Abner?
Let's say that I'm pretty sure somebody has ported it to an Android Wear device. I think I'm remembering that correctly. It runs on a lot of things. Let's just say that.
Yeah. I don't want to say the game because it might give it away. But yeah, there's it's an up there AAA action game. It supposedly, quote, works really well on Yeti. Yeah. So
technologically, Google has figured, it seems like they figured it out, and they're working on getting names and content, like the Kotaku report said. That like they've got this technology down and running, is the impression that we're getting, and it's technically capable of doing a lot of good things.
Right, and so it'll be interesting. I wonder if part of me wonders if like if Valve is working on something like this. Valve has all of the
pieces.
They have all the pieces except maybe the streaming stuff. Like maybe, Google, I think, has more strength in that category, like the technical like streaming of it. But Valve definitely has all of the brands and all the names. And Valve, I mean, so like they tried that hardware box, right? Like a Steam box. Those were a thing for a while. They tried pushing Steam consoles, right? And those kind of all failed. I think they recently, if I remember correctly, they recently removed all Steam box hardware from their site because it was just flopped.
Wasn't working.
Yeah, and that controller too, like no one wants to use that.
If I remember correctly, the problem with the OnLive controller was that it sometimes broke in half. It was like really shoddy. I forgot who, but they took it out of the box.
I would say that's a pretty critical flaw.
Can you imagine what a Google game controller looks like? Because like conventional thinking is that it looks like an Xbox or a PS4. But imagine if they do something crazy like Nintendo with the Joy-Cons.
What if it's just fabric, like the top of the Google Home Mini, and it just becomes greasier and greasier over time?
Oh, God.
It matches your couch perfectly, but it does get greasier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's, side note, random side note. I'm hoping that the second gen Google Home, whatever that, like the standard Google Home category, mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that they do more with like the fabric. I know that the bottom part you can like switch it off, but
yeah,
I wonder if they're gonna in the next couple of years launch a second gen Google Home. There's not really any reason to, because it's not like it's hitting, it's not hitting any hard limitations or anything.
Now that you bring it up, the original Google Home and the Google Home Mini and Max, they were quite different, because like I thought the motif that Google is going with were the like the ring of colored lights on the original Home.
Yep.
But
yep.
on the newer generations, it's just four dots. And I kind of prefer the original Google Home design.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know which one I prefer, but they definitely seem like they were different generations of product, which makes sense. I mean, they released a year apart. But yeah, the other thing is that Google really tried the whole like the customizability thing of the you know, what do you call them? I don't even know what they're called. The bases. Which I think was a flop. I mean, who wants to pay $20 for like?
Yeah, I love colors, but even I couldn't. It's just going to be on there. It's how many times am I actually switching this?
Right. I feel like the gray, or like, you know, like with the Home Max, for instance, like almost everyone has the gray Home Max, I think. And I think there's a reason for that. And I think it's because gray just fits everywhere.
Yeah. So boring though. Imagine if it was, oh my gosh. Imagine if the grill was just like a swirl of colors, like Google, the four Google colors in like a plain paint splatter. I don't know. They could do something crazy.
Speaking of that.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. No, what's up?
I was just going to say, like, I'm surprised that the cover of the Home Max didn't come off and that Google doesn't sell other covers. I always found that surprising.
I mean, how much would you have to charge for one of those big Home Max covers? Like, those would be like $50 a piece or something at Google's prices. Because Google has Google does Apple pricing on the Google store. If you know, like Apple's accessories are always like so premium priced, and I think Google's following the model.
If they can get away with it,
and I think they are so far. But I was gonna say, have you ever seen one of the charcoal Google Home Maxes in person? I haven't at all. Seth has the silver, the gray one or whatever, and every unit I've ever seen like on display at Google events, at Google I/O, whatever, it's always the gray one. I've never seen the black one, and I kind of want one just to add to the Google hardware collection.
I look forward to a fire sale one day.
I think the charcoal Google Home Max might go down in history as one of those like rare collectible items.
I mean, I still want the Nexus Q, but that's not happening. But I digress. No, but
have we ever talked about the Nexus Q-tip? So, wow, that's funny. The Nexus Q-tip. The Nexus Q space tip we received.
Is that Google was exploring more spherical shaped designs internally. They weren't making a successor device. They just were really interested in seeing what they could use that design for.
Specifically, they were testing a device that was a desktop Chrome OS device. So it was like Chromebit, but like a desktop hard. So like it was probably like a Chrome OS device in the form factor of like a Mac Mini, basically, but it was spherical, like a Nexus Q. I think our tipster said it came from like some of the same people on the same team that worked on the Nexus Q, but it eventually just got like scrapped. So if anyone out there on any off chance has a photo of this Nexus Q inspired Chrome OS desktop device, you need to leak that. You need to send that to my email so that I can share that with the world, because that is a piece of Google history that needs to be seen.
Yeah. Such a good design. So jealous.
Yeah. Oh well. Rip Nexus Q. Okay. Next up, what do we have? We've got. All right. So I guess we can talk a little bit about Acer Chromebook 10, Sorry. That's just proof yep. that the name is terrible. Chromebook 10, Chromebook, not Chromebook 10. This is the Acer Chromebook Tab 10.
Which doesn't sound like a Samsung device whatsoever, Acer. Tab 10,
no,
tabs.
No, yeah.
Never confused.
Obviously, the tab thing is a Samsung thing, but the name is bad for a different reason, and that's because this is not a book. There's nothing Chromebook about this. There's no, it doesn't fold. It doesn't, there's no keyboard. There's no book. The book element is missing. It's just a tablet. So why don't we just call it a Chrome Tab or something?
Oh, such a good name. Chrome Tab, as like what they call all of them, is really good.
What, Chrome Tab, but with like no space, like Chrome Tab, Tab locate, lowercase, like no space. I think that would work. But yeah, I mean, the thinking is almost definitely that Chromebook has, you know, household name recognition. Like,
yeah.
You and your mom and everyone knows what a Chromebook is, but yeah. So yeah. Like, this is it was launched at MWC, if I remember correctly, or first shown off at MWC. It is a Chrome OS device. Obviously, it is in a tablet form factor. So, like I said, there's no keyboard. It's basically, you know, this is what the Pixel C should have been. Right, yeah. Right here. This is what the Pixel C should have been.
And could have been.
Right, and could have been. Like, didn't we hear that Google was testing Chrome OS on it instead of Android, and they eventually, yeah. I don't know, maybe I'm missing.
Android.
They went with Android, obviously, and that, you know, it failed, and it could have been the best-selling device of all time. That's probably an exaggeration, but... so, yeah, it's all right. I mean, I guess my main... complaint with it is the same as the Pixel Book. So the Pixel Book is like super overpowered in terms of hardware, but it doesn't feel overpowered when you use it. It feels like a Chromebook when you use it. I mean obviously when you're using the web and you go to like a performance needy website in Chrome, it's fine. It obviously performs like any Intel powered laptop would, but the OS itself, I feel like, feels like, I mean, the problem with the Pixelbook, in my opinion, is that the OS feels like it was made for $100 devices, which it was. And so you're using a $1,000 laptop, and honestly, the software experience in terms of like animations and stuff and smoothness of the UI, and I guess like that like finesse or like that final touch, It feels like you're using a $200 laptop versus a $1,000 laptop. Mm-hmm. But like I said, the raw power is there, you know? So like it's not like it's dropping frames or whatever. It's just like the OS was built, you know,
with different hardware in mind.
Exactly. And so that's my main complaint with Chrome OS in general, is it feels like it's built for the lowest common denominator hardware. The Chromebook Tab 10 is no exception to that. And I mean, it is what it is. It's a Chrome OS device. It runs apps from the Play Store. I guess the interesting thing about this one is that it's basically any modern Chrome OS laptop, but without the keyboard. That's all this is, because most of the popular ones, at least, you know, like the Chromebook Spin and all, well, like most of them have touchscreens at this point. So it's basically just like what you normally have with a Chromebook minus the keyboard. And this one comes with a stylus, and it's nothing special. No, it is not.
It's not active. I think that's the terminology.
Right. And it doesn't have any like pressure sensitivity, and it doesn't have a button. It's not like the Pixelbook's pen, which it's okay because this is not $100, Google. But yeah, I mean, so little gripes. I mean, it's about what you'd expect. It's not the best performing thing ever, but
it's $300. That's
yeah. Like, and the other thing is it's made for education. So like the target market is like kids sitting in a classroom. And for that purpose, it's everything you could need. It's got speakers, pretty decent sized speakers. Haven't listened to them yet. It has a USB-C port. So welcome to 2018. Speakers on both sides, a headphone jack. So That's a win. I guess it's kind of necessary for the classroom. Nice textured back. Probably helps it not be dropped as easily. I'm tempted to drop it right now on the podcast just to test like the classroom readiness. Should we do it?
Next week after. I was going to say next week after
the review.
Yeah.
No, I feel like I trust it. I feel like we can do it.
Okay.
I mean, it was made for being thrown around. This is a review. I mean, it was made for being thrown around a classroom. Mm. So it needs to be able to handle at least like a 5-foot drop. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. I'm going to do it. If you're not watching the video, for those who are listening on podcast platforms, you can watch it on YouTube, on youtube.com/9to5Google. You can't really see anything, but we're just going to go for it. You'll be able to hear it at least. Here we go. Yikes. That was pretty bad.
That sounds pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. It's hefty.
It survived. 1.2 pounds, if I recall correctly.
It survived fine. There's not even a scratch on it, so we're good. yeah, I'm impressed. It passes the fifth grader is trying to take it from his friend test. I guess that's what you could call it. But yeah, it runs. So one thing that kind of bothers me about it is it runs place. So obviously it runs apps from the Play Store. I've been having problems with it running windowed. So like every app I download, it will only run in full screen.
Yeah.
Which
is still the same issue with. You can same like the second you take a convertible into full screen mode, it full screens everything.
Yeah. That's one downside.
You can multitask though, so that's a plus side.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Another weird thing about the UI, and maybe you can tell me what I'm doing wrong, but so apps in full screen. So like, there's no way to not run them in full screen. It's like it's all or nothing, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. So like the X to like close apps is you have to pull down from the top to like show it. When you're running apps in full screen, like you can't just close apps. So what I find myself doing is I tap and hold on the icon in the drawer and I click close. And instead of like trying to swipe down and click X, I don't know why, but that I wish the X was just always showing. I don't know if maybe that's just me. The UI we talked, I don't know if we talked about this. So the UI is Chrome Modern Design. So maybe you can answer this. I haven't been using a Chromebook for the last few months. So is Modern Design running on everything at this point on Chrome 67, or is it just?
So it first like officially rolled out to this Chrome 67 stable channel on tablet devices, like this Chromebook Tab 10. But that's the first instance of it launching officially.
Okay, gotcha.
But the problem is that it doesn't scale very well to desktops, because on the Pixelbook I'm running, like everything, it's like the touch targets are so large, it's like so wasteful. But I think they need to tweak it. I think they're going to tweak it when it comes to desktops, to like a Mac or Windows eventually. But for the first iteration, the focus is on making tablet touch optimized Chrome run better.
Yeah, I think it is better. I think in this case, in this specific case, with this being a tablet only, I mean the big thing really is how big the new tab button is, which is much appreciated. I think that's that. I don't like the keyboard, so that's another weird thing. Is maybe I don't know why it's doing this, but the predictive typing or swipe to type, whatever, it's really bad. It's not getting not getting hardly anything right versus my Android phone.
So at I/O they announced that Gboard will be coming soon.
Oh, okay. I missed that then. So I was under the impression that Gboard was already here.
Nope, that is nothing like Gboard. Well, it looks like Gboard, but
It looks like, exactly like Gboard. And I was like, wait, this has Gboard? That's cool. But then it didn't work like Gboard.
Yeah. So yeah, that should make it significantly better.
And then the other thing, just a little thing, was, there's like a button to, it's like a stylus tool button on the in the bottom drawer. Oh, and yeah. and you can use like capture region or whatever, capturing like screenshots or whatever. And then you get like one of those Android like notification things from the right side, and you click annotate image, and it opens it up in Google Keep.
Yep.
Which I feel like Google Keep is a little bit outdated, and I feel like Google either needs to significantly update Google Keep, or visually, or they need to let me use a different app. So like set a different app as default for like editing screenshots.
In theory, you can do that. You can set a note-taking app, but I've never really looked for other alternatives on the Play Store. It would be the Play Store, I believe.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my thoughts so far. I just got it today, so I've only been playing with it for a few hours. You'll see my review on 9to5google.com. Once again, this is primarily for education, so it's I'm reviewing it from that point of view, I guess. So yeah, that's the Chromebook. That's the Chromebook Tab 10. And then I guess finally we can round out the show talking a little bit about Pixel 3, unless there's something else you'd rather talk about.
Let's look at what else happened this week.
There was a Google Home app today was updated with more material theming styling. So they got bottom app bar. That's the TLDR on that one. Google Maps with material theme has been rolling out widely this week.
You used it yet? It's nice.
Expected. Yeah, it's nice. I like the year score thing. It's awesome. It's so far. And let's see. Google invested $22 million in KaiOS, which is
both of us are interested in.
What'd you say?
Like, both of us are interested in as like a dumb phone that we could maybe like unwind away from.
Yeah, I could see. So like what I've been doing lately, and this might be a tech journalist problem, hashtag tech journalist problems, but I've been pretty much just like leaving, like as soon as I'm done with work at like 5 or 6 or whatever, I just leave my phone sitting on the charger for the rest of the day. I don't even have my phone on me at all. And I just wear either my Fitbit or my Apple Watch. And I just use that to, you know, if I'm in the house, I'll get notifications on it. And that, you know, it's like if something absolutely urgent happens, then I'll go fetch my phone. But yeah, like I have serious like tech addiction problems. I mean, the digital wellness stuff is going to be really great for me. But yeah, like KaiOS phones, the banana phone for those who remember, Nokia launched that at MWC. That's attractive to me. Like I kind of want a KaiOS phone in a way. And then, you know, David Ruddick, Android Police, was like, yeah, you'll last a day. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, because I don't know. What do you think about it?
It has Twitter and Gmail, and I could live with that so hard, because it has like a basic Twitter client and can get Gmail messages, which I might be fine with. That might be enough for like a weekend in case anything goes insane. But
yeah.
The interesting thing, like the Nokia one, like it doesn't work on any US carriers, but imagine having Assistant on. Well, it has Assistant on, Google Assistant. That's like such a useful tool, as it's like the idea of a weekend phone and Google Maps, mind you.
Yeah.
Like all these companies making like small one-off phones.
I've been constantly finding myself wanting Project Aura. Project Aura, we talked about it a lot. Supposedly it was Google's project to put Google Assistant in an earbud. So like it might have been actually some of the same people that worked on Pixel Buds. But I think the original idea was it was Google Glass but audio only. So it was like theoretically like a full-fledged Google Assistant that had Wi-Fi and everything, but just like it was an earbud or a pair of earbuds or something. And I find myself really like wanting that all the time, thinking like I would really love to just not have my phone on me at all and have something like a pair of AirPods kind of set up and just be able to talk to it and Google Assistant be better. I think Google Assistant has a lot of room to improve.
Oh yeah, especially for that use case.
Right, like for being able to have like, I don't know. There's
hey,
lots
Google,
of
do I have any notifications? Do I have any email
right,
messages?
Right,
that kind of stuff.
Right. Like oh. having being able to have more natural language and stuff, yeah. Having it be able to read my notifications to me, you know,
it's simple
stuff. Things like that. Yeah. Yeah, I find myself thinking that all the time. Like earlier, actually, I was in the shower and I was like, I don't have my phone on me, but this question I had about something that I was working on, like it was like really bugging me. Like, I really want to know the answer to this. I'm not going to get out of the shower to go grab my phone to look it up right now. I'm not going to like, I really don't feel like yelling across the room at the Google Home or whatever. I wish I just had something in my ear so I could just like double tap it or whatever, or, you know, something in my ear 24/7. Like, I feel like that's going to be like the first level of consumer AR.
Automatically, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Anyway, that's just my musing, my hopes for the next few years with Google Assistant. Anything else happened this week? Google Home went down for like an entire morning or something, like a few weeks, for
some
a few hours.
That's some users.
Yeah, it wasn't everyone, but it was most people. At least I saw hundreds of tweets, so it was pretty widespread. And then I thought it was actually really significant. Rishi Chandra, VP of Home Products, he sent a personal email. I think Google figured out, they actually figured out which exact Google homeowners had the problem.
Which I didn't get one.
Right. Some people didn't get one. Some people did, but a ton of people did. So I think it was like, I don't know, it was probably like a quarter of home users or some huge number like that had got this email, where it was like the most like sincere and humble email I've ever seen from a $1 trillion tech company ever. It was like, what happened yesterday, as if it was like your ex like texting you to like, or your girlfriend telling you like they're sorry for something. You know, it was very human, very personal. And it was like, you may have noticed a problem with your Google Home. We found a glitch, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, it's frustrating when technology doesn't work the way it should, especially when you're depending on it. We're sorry that this happened. It's like, I've never seen a company do this before where it's like, this wasn't even a huge problem. I mean, we wrote about it and I'm sure tons of people were affected, but it wasn't like, I don't know. Like, it's not like most people aren't using their homes like all morning long. You know, it's probably like, in my case, this was how I noticed it. I woke up and I said, hot word, what time is it? And it said, sorry, we're down, or like, sorry, like whatever it says whenever there's no connection or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I can't help with that right now or something. And then I was like, okay. And then within a couple hours, I'm sure it was starting work again, but I don't interact with my Google Home devices all day long. So anyways, I just thought that was really like, I don't know, a lot of integrity on Google's part to send that email. And then the other thing was the YouTube drama. So like YouTube did that little, they announced it during one tiny little test that affects 1/3% of YouTube users, and every YouTube creator on the internet blew up about it. I don't know.
Which is, I think somebody did the math. It's like 46 million users or something. It's the scale of how these things work is notable.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's a lot of people. I forget that 1/3% is still, sounds like not much.
When there's almost 2 billion logged in users a month. Yeah.
Scale is,
it's there.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah. Long story short, creators were complaining that, I don't know, a lot of it I think is communication. Like, creators are like hating on Google for making any change at all, or testing anything without explicitly announcing it. And I don't know, creators are just paranoid a little bit. I mean, a lot of them are dependent on YouTube for their living. So, you know, there's that. But I feel like my take
Google
on it
is not
a little bit. It's a little bit of an overreaction.
And my take on it is that Google is not going to sabotage its platform. It knows that that's where the advantage is.
Right, right. And Google's explanation was basically like, a lot of creators use auto-generated images. So you may be mad, but we're trying to do this for your fellow creator, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's justified. And I think, like you said, Google's end goal is just like the creators, they want to make money, right? So it's not like they're going to try and sabotage the community. So I feel like creators, let's give Google a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much, that pretty much wraps up the show. Any other like final thoughts you have for the week?
That's it for me.
All right. Well, until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop every week here on YouTube. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, the recently launched Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, which is still live as of this recording. And you can even listen on our site, 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks, Abner, for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Bye.